sad, but my head's in Mississippi. The blues has got a hold of me. I believe I'm getting dizzy.
Welcome back to the Rodcast. It is a new theme Thursday edition of the Rodcast. That's when my co-host, the Idillionaire, Patrick Davies, who comes up with all the musically themed days of the week. That's when he comes up with a really cool and creative theme for a new theme Thursday. And today, because it is actually 7-11. That's the date. And it is the unofficial holiday for 7-11. Yeah, the business, 7-11. One-stop shop right around your corner. And I got two 7-11s by me. So in honor of it being 7-11, by the way, you can get you a free Slurpee today, too. All of the songs reference 7-11 in the lyrics in some way, form, or fashion. So yes, that is. So happy 7-11 out there.
Yes.
I haven't had a 7-11 Slurpee in forever. Honestly, I don't remember ever getting the actual 7-Eleven Slurpee. I would get like an Icy. You know the Icy? The
yes,
actual Icy? I'll get Icy's, but that's different than like a 7-Eleven Slurpee. It is essentially in the same family. I get that. But I don't think I ever had like the Slurpee.
I could have, but I would have been a kid.
Yeah.
I don't think as an adult I've ever gotten. I don't think I've gotten an Icy as an adult.
I've gotten an Icy as an adult. I love Icy's and like snow cones.
I don't think
Oh, that's good stuff.
I mean, and maybe I have 20 years ago, in the last 15 years, 10 to 15 years, I can't tell.
You ever had an Icy? Really?
I don't think I have.
Oh, man. I love those things. Everybody's hot. It's a literally within walking distance from my house.
Yeah.
You know that snow cone stand is right there with Brody? Oh,
yeah.
Dude. Every now and then, your boy just walk on down there, and I purposefully walk in the heat so that I get really
hot. So you enjoy it better?
So it's even more refreshing. Oh, that first taste of a snow cone after sitting in the heat. Oh, man, it's excellent. Excellent.
I think I've driven past that a million times in my life, and I've thought about it. Never stopped, not once.
You've been tempted. You're like,
no, you see it. Like, that'd be good right now. Then I'm like, nah.
Yeah, not worth driving over there, right? Or detouring for wherever you're going. All I say is, don't get the big. I was getting a big snow cone to me like that. No, that's a little too much. Like I get usually the small one. I get like the small one.
Yeah,
and because I don't want to. I mean, who wants like a huge snow cone? So it's supposed to melt. Basically, just comes like a sugary drink. I don't want that. So even when I get a snow cone or the icy or the Slurpee, I'm gonna get a small one. You know, even when I was a kid.
Well, yeah, because once it melts down, it's just watered down snow cone flavoring.
Sugar water. Yeah. I don't want watered down sugar water. No,
that's I see it, and I always think, like, too, it's been so long that I have no idea what is on the menu or how to order snow cones.
And that's another issue.
And so then I have to go stand there for a little bit, but I'm going to be the only one. So then they have to be like, are you ready? I'm like, I have to figure out what this is first because I haven't done this since I was a kid, just willy-nilly go up.
It's at least, I want to say, the flavors, I want to say there's at least 100 flavors, like something crazy like that. Like, it's a bunch of them. Some of them are on the board. Sometimes they got them, like, on this, I don't know, on some laminated thing there for all of them. But it's a bunch of flavors. Like, it's way too many. It's like Netflix. It's just too much stuff. And, you know what I mean, you can't even decide on what you want because it's too much damn stuff. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And it ain't all good. It's only a few things that are actually good. But that's basically how I feel when I sit at snow cones. I feel like I'm watching Netflix. I'm like, is it necessary to have all this stuff? This is way too much stuff. Way too much content.
Too much. Just narrow it down to the winners.
Yeah, just narrow it down to the best and then give me that. No, I don't need
How many of these little containers have dust on them? Get rid of them. They got dust on because you ain't using them. Get rid of them.
What's the expiration date on some of these? I need to know because I know ain't nobody ever ordered that one. The chocolate flavored snow cone.
Oh,
who the hell's ordering that?
No.
Okay, so I know that was dusty.
No. You just get chocolate.
Just go get some chocolate, damn it. Yeah, exactly. The coffee flavored one, whatever the hell it is. All right. Anyways, like, all right. So we'll get to some discussion here about the EA Sports College Football video game coming up. That is, I think, going to drop next week. But they are leaking out a lot of the ratings, and they got the top 100 players that have been released. And we'll get to those ratings. Two Longhorns getting some love. And also Team USA, the U.S. men's national team, the basketball team, they did face off in an exhibition against Canada. There's a lot of talk about who the starting lineup would be. Well, we got a little bit of a sneak peek about who the starting lineup may consist of from that exhibition versus Canada. So we'll talk about that. And my man Patrick got a chance to watch it because he watches any type of basketball. Are you watching the 3-on-3? The Ice Cube?
No, I haven't watched a lot of it this year.
Okay.
I have not watched a lot of that this year.
You've watched some then?
I've watched it in years past, and I've put it on before, but it's... Like, the first year, it was kind of like an entertaining, different thing.
Yeah,
but
just to see what the format and everything.
Yeah, and so it's not bad, but yeah, it's not. Like, because there's no, like, in the NBA, then you can keep following. You follow the players from that, and then that's kind of like the post-NBA.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so,
yeah, you're right.
Like, okay.
Retirement league. And not even for the stars, because the real stars are like, no, I don't need to play. I'm good. It's like the C-list retirement.
It's like, I know Katino Mobley's been in that league for a long time.
There you go. That's a perfect example. Yes. Like I said, C-list NBA guys who like, you know what, I still want to play, and I can earn a little check. That'd be cool. But no, I mean, remember they, at one point, Ice Cube offered Caitlin Clark what was it?
I know we offered Shaq a bunch of money too to try and come and play in it. Yeah.
Yeah. Who's the biggest star they've ever had in that 3-on-3 league? That's the question. That's kind of the thing. That's what they're struggling to get. They need more though. They need more names. Power.
I think Steven Jackson played in it for a while.
Okay. Yeah. That's what they need. They just need a steady flow of star power.
I'm sure there's somebody. I'm just not thinking of that played in it. But yeah. No. It's entertaining enough, but again, it's like, and it's too, it's, there's only like, what, 6 to 8 teams, something like that. So the matchups kind of every week are similar, and you get in it. I mean, I'm interested. They're coming to San Antonio. I may go down there for San Antonio to see it in person and see if it's any different in person.
Yeah. Oh, you might be right about that. And it's not an Olympic sport. I know they were trying to, is it?
I know women's 3-on-3 is.
Okay, I knew there was a push to try to. That was part of why the inception of the league. They were like, oh, no, we'll make a push for Olympic 3-on-3 basketball. All right, so anyway, there you go. My point is Patrick watches all basketball, folks.
Yes.
Y'all want to talk some summer league. The man can do that, too. We won't allow it on the show. We won't allow it. We will not allow summer league discussion.
Oh, man, but they're about to start Vegas, man. Vegas.
See, he's champing at the bit to talk some summer league basketball with y'all.
Castle looked really good in that last game, man. Stephon Castle looked good.
I know you're watching it. I know you got notes on it and everything. No, you and my boy Matt Butler, because I want to say they do – like fantasy in summer league.
Oh, that seems
terrible.
No, I couldn't do that.
Oh, no. He's like you. If I need an update on some hoops of any kind, I want to say he might even do like WNBA like fantasy. Like he is deep. He's excellent. Like he's amazing.
Yeah, he's good at
actually. He's really good at it, but he's, like I said, I don't know if I'd want to be good at something if I got to watch, you know, summer league basketball, WNBA basketball, stuff like that. I'm like, I won't be forced to watch. Yeah, I wouldn't watch Caitlin Clark when she's playing, you know, in the game against Andrew Reese. I don't want to be forced to watch all of them, but, hey, man, my man is committed. All right, somebody else who's committed is my man Patrick. Committed to the Horn headlines and bringing you all of the top stories of the day. So let's get to those. Let's get updated, educated, and informed with Patrick Davidson and the Horn headlines.
All right, the Horn headlines brought to you by Top Gun Rentals and Lawn Equipment. Team USA basketball started their warm-up to the Olympics with an exhibition game against Canada last night in Las Vegas, winning 86-72. USA had 4 players score in double digits, led by Anthony Edwards with 13, and Anthony Davis picked up a double-double with 10 points and 11 rebounds. Defense led the way for USA, holding Canada 33% shooting on the night and picking up 11 steals and 9 blocks. Team USA will look to fix some of their turnover problems and get a quicker start offensively in their second tune-up game against Australia on Monday. In the MLB, the Astros pushed their home win streak to 8 games with a 9-1 win over the Marlins yesterday. A 4-run second inning gave the Astros a lead, and they never looked back, with Yonier Diaz contributing 3 RBIs. Framber Valdez was able to strike out 10 in his 7 innings pitch, getting his 8th win of the season, and Caleb Ort finished out the game. Yordan Alvarez left the game after getting a walk and an RBI single. Left the game with right hip tightness. Jake Blossom will get his second career start tonight, returning from the IL after leaving his first start with shoulder discomfort in June. And the Rangers snapped their five-game win streak with a loss to the Angels 7-2 yesterday. Michael Lorenzen gave up five runs in the first three innings, starting in the second, where he allowed three walks and a hit-by-pitch in the inning. Leody Taveras got a two-run homer in the fifth, but it wasn't enough, however. The Rangers still win the series versus the Angels 2-1 and now get the day off before facing the Astros in a weekend series before the All-Star break. And that is your Horn Headlines.
Horn Headlines brought to you by Top Gun Rentals and Lawn Equipment. Grass is growing and yards need mowing. We got deep discounts on Gravely, Toro, Hustler, and Steel zero-turn mowers this month at Top Gun. TopGun.net. We'll shoot you straight.
All right, thank you, Patrick, for the Horn Headlines. We appreciate those. We'll get to one of those Horn Headlines, actually. We want to talk about the Team USA exhibition game against Canada last night. But first, I want to get into the ratings, the latest player ratings that have been revealed from the new EA Sports College Football video game. First and foremost, I know you care about the Longhorns. Two Longhorns were revealed in the top 100 players list and ranking for the new EA Sports College Football video game. Quinn Ewers and Kelvin Banks. Quinn Ewers is ranked 27th overall, 92 rating, got 81 speed. He's actually faster than Shedeur Sanders based on the game score. I don't know if he is in real life. 83 acceleration, 56 strength, 97 awareness. They got Quinn Ewers' awareness at 97 and the 76 jumping ability. What about the 97 awareness for Quinn? That's pretty damn good. I mean, basically saying that his to me, the awareness would be awareness in the pocket, right?
I think
awareness of pressure. Like, what's their official definition of awareness? Pocket presence has got to be part of awareness, right?
I think awareness is more of seeing if your guys are open.
Is that awareness
I think that's what it is. I could be different, and it could change. I have not looked at what all those mean a ton, but I have no idea either.
Trust me.
But I think that's more of what it is that they have more of an awareness of. So basically, if you're playing against him in the game and it's a computer, the computer has a better percentage to find the guy and not throw the bad pick.
Okay. All right. I like that. All right. I think that's the highest of all of his ratings is his awareness. And the same is true for Kelvin Banks, who's 13th, and his awareness is 96. Obviously it changes, I'm sure, awareness overall. To me, it's got to be football instincts then. If it's awareness and they're true to everybody, it's got to be like just your overall instincts. And, yeah, for a quarterback, that translates to, like you said, aware of the receivers who are open. For Kelvin Banks, I'm sure it translates to something different. But that's his highest score is his awareness as well. But he's 94 overall, 13th ranked player out of 100, 94 overall, 67 speed, 72 acceleration, 92 strength, 96 awareness, as I pointed out, and jumping ability is 71. So that's Kelvin Banks. Those are only two guys. And some people are saying, whoa, what do you mean? Texas only has two players there, one of the top six best teams on the game. That is true. To me, that probably means there's more talented depth around Quinn and around Kelvin Banks. So I think probably the depth that Texas is rated relatively high, like you don't have a lot of guys with really low scores overall on the team, so you got a lot of guys with relatively high scores is probably what that means to me. But of course, when that's revealed, we shall see. And remember last year, let's say they decided to bring back the game prior to last season, how many Longhorns are ranked in the top 100 then? Two? Three?
Yeah.
Kelvin Banks, Xavier Worthy, maybe Jalen Ford, coming out that great season he had. He's in there too. But that's about it. I mean, Tavondre Sweat and Byron Murphy hadn't even made their first start yet prior to last season. A.D. Mitchell had just transferred. He hadn't proven himself yet. Jonathan Brooks wasn't a Doak Walker Award finalist. Would have won the Doak Walker Award. He hadn't gotten hurt. But beginning of the season, Bijan and Rojo are gone. That was an unproven commodity. We have no idea. Matter of fact, the guy, he didn't even start the first game. Remember, Cedric Baxter won the starting job. So he definitely wouldn't have been on the game. I mean, you might have had just two, three guys on there last year. Three, I think, at the beginning of the season. But at the end of the season, once they send out the updates, which I'm sure they do, right, send out the updates, and you probably would have had Xavier Worthy, Kelvin Banks, Sweat, Murphy. I still think Jalen Ford should make it, even though I guess his season was down, so maybe they took him off last year. But maybe A.D. Mitchell's got a chance to make it. Maybe J.T. Sanders. I definitely think Jonathan Brooks would have been on there. So you got to say five, maybe six guys in your top 100 by the end of the year. So that could be the case here, too. If you're going to make a run to win the SEC, go to the SEC title game, make a run in the college football playoff, there will be at least two more names that pop up, that pop up to be impact players for you if you're going to make it all the way to the SEC title game. So I don't know who it's going to be. Right now, my best bet would be who would be the next one for you, Patrick? Out of this two, who's the next one that should be in the top 100 by the end of the season?
I mean, you'd hope that it would be a wide receiver would be able to get in there.
That sounds about right.
So either Isaiah Bond or Jonte Cook, you would kind of hope. And, I mean, Wingo maybe is the offshoot of that. But one of those guys to be able to get to be a 90 and put themselves in that top group.
I agree with that.
You would hope that would be in there. Defensively, I mean, maybe a Trey Moore if he has a really good season.
And he's proven it at one level. If he can prove it at this level,
yeah.
Right.
If he does what he did at UTSA, then he's clearly in there. Anthony Hill would be an interesting one to see.
Anthony Hill's the one I'd like to see on there. Make that kind of jump.
And then I mean, we Alfred Collins. We know that there has been, always been the potential for Alfred Collins, but this is where we said there was potential with T'Vondre Sweat for a long time, and then we said what he did last season, so there's a possibility that could be a guy you could look at, too.
I agree with that. No, you're right about that. And looking at the overall rankings, you have – so the top 100 guys, here is the breakdown of how many each, school had. Like, basically, which school had the most selections in the top 100 ranking for EA Sports New College Football. Ohio State had 8 players in the top 100, easily considered the most talented team in college football. Georgia and Alabama, Texas got to see Georgia. Georgia had 6. Michigan and Oregon had 5. Texas got to see Michigan. LSU, Iowa, and Notre Dame had 4. Ole Miss, Penn State, Kansas, Arizona and Miami with 3. Shout out to Kansas showing up. Oklahoma, Wisconsin, Clemson, Texas, Colorado, North Carolina, Kentucky, Louisville, Cincinnati, Oklahoma State, and Liberty with 2. And 1 A&M. A&M's got 1. Texas got 1. West Virginia, a bunch of schools got 1. There you go. So that's the breakdown of the players based on at least the schools who have the most players on the EA Sports College Football video game. And your top 10 players, or at least the highest ranked players, Will Johnson. He is the cornerback out of Michigan. He's the highest rated player at 96 overall. Will Campbell is also a 96 overall. He's the highest rated tackle. Kelvin Banks is the second highest rated tackle. And Ollie Gordon is also a 96, the Oklahoma State running back who just recently had to deal with being arrested for a DWI and was at Big 12 Media Days talking about that. So those are your 3 top players. And then there are 7 other players with a 95 overall, including 2 players that Texas will have to see, including Mason Graham, the D tackle from Michigan, and Malachi Starks, the safety from Georgia, and Tate Redledge, the Georgia offensive guard among that group. So at least nobody got a 99. 99 should be sacred. That should be a really exclusive club. Don't give out 99 until you see a player that seems generational. Generational players get 99. Everybody else kind of starts after that. That's 98 and lower.
Especially in a college game where it'd be like at the end of the season, if someone just has the all-out you know, hands down Heisman Trophy winner, not a, then maybe, but coming into a season,
you'd should have never to be it. You're right.
Yeah, you'd have to be a sophomore who won the Heisman hands down, and that'd be your only.
Yeah, that's great. But like maybe like Caleb Williams, who won the Heisman like as an underclassman, and then coming back. That's how you can be like, all right, maybe I can justify 99 for that dude. But other than that, no, no. That's a great. That's a good rule. Rule of thumb, no 99s at the beginning of the year unless you are a Heisman Trophy, a returning
even
Heisman
that,
Trophy winner.
Even that.
Even then, real. Yeah, you're right. It shouldn't be a guarantee. It could have been a weak year
for
Heisman Trophy winners. And there could be some exceptions, like, you know, if you just had a truly dominant player. I'm trying to think, you know, I mean, there are dominant players who can't win the Heisman just because we know it's usually an award given to
so like
the
a
best
D
player
or somebody like that,
the best
team.
Yeah, just a freak of nature, you know what I mean, that kind of player where they're truly the most dominant force in college football. They just can't win the Heisman, like the Ndamukong Suh type player,
that kind of
guy. So, but those are rare too, like extremely rare. To have those kind of players in college football. Like Will Johnson, he would have been the top cornerback drafted last season if he left last NFL draft, and he's still only a 96. So 99, I agree with it. Keep it sacred and only break it out for guys who are seen to be generational players. And Patrick, you're right. It should only be updated at the end of the season most of the time too, that they achieve that, if that is indeed the case. All right, so those are the ranking. Oh, by the way, quarterback rankings. Quinn Ewers is tied in the quarterback rankings for the highest-rated quarterbacks on the video game with Dylan Gabriel with a 90. They got the 92 overall grade. Both of those quarterbacks do. And then Carson Beck and Shedeur Sanders have a 93 overall rating, and they are tied with the at the top with the best rating for any quarterback in the country or in the game. So there you go. Quinn Ewers, by the end of the season, hopefully Quinn Ewers gets updated and he is the highest rated quarterback in the game. We shall see. All right, let's get to this Team USA conversation. Last night, Team USA, the men's national team, took on Canada. And a lot of people were asking questions about who's going to be the starting lineup versus Canada, or at least the starting lineup when they start the Olympics. It's just an exhibition game. But they trotted out Steph, LeBron, Devin Booker, Joel Embiid, and Drew Holiday. A lot of people were surprised to see Drew Holiday as a starter for Team USA. But given the guards they were going up against, Patrick, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander among that group, Jamal Murray among that group, understandable that you want a perimeter defender. What were your thoughts about Team USA and how they looked, the 86-72 win over Team Canada last night in the exhibition contest?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, we can always say there's only one basketball, so you didn't need five offensive players. You wanted someone to play a little bit more defense. It's one of the reasons why I think they're bringing in Derek White to play alongside to replace Kawhi Leonard, is it gives you another guard that can come in there and play good defense for you, give you minutes. Doesn't need the ball in his hands, but can hit threes if the ball comes out, but he doesn't need the ball in his hands. Drew Holiday is that type of guy as well. So they felt good about that. The game overall, they just started extremely slow. Looked a little tight, looked like they were trying to find a good shot, and then they found a good shot and they just weren't hitting them. So the offense didn't work well, way too many turnovers early as well. And so Canada got out to a little bit of a lead early on, and then they started to put in the bench players. Anthony Edwards came in, Jason Tatum came in, and they just felt like they wanted a little bit more. They were a little bit, you know, they weren't worried about it. They knew it was an exhibition game in Vegas, so they just came out and shooting. And all of a sudden, the shots start to go. Everything becomes a little bit easier. The defense tightens up a little bit more. When you start playing offense, you start hitting shots, your defense can tighten up. And from that point on, USA was in the driver's seat, and they were able to keep going. Joel Embiid didn't have a very good game. I think he'll get better as time goes on. He just didn't look the part.
Fouled out.
Just it did not look the part in game one. But we know he can play basketball. I just don't think he's played with, you know, players like this very often. You know, we looked at Philadelphia roster last year, wasn't great. You know, Tyrese Maxey's a good player, but Tyrese Maxey is not Steph Curry and LeBron James and Drew Holiday and those guys on the court with you. So I think he's just kind of getting used to playing with that, you know, being a guy that they want him to play a lot more defense in the post instead of being a guy where the offense completely runs through him. where he was like what he is in Philadelphia. So, you know, there'll be a little bit of learning curve, but even if that isn't, you'll see Anthony Davis come in and play a little bit more. He had a good game. He knew what it is to be in the Olympics. He knows what it means to be that type of player. So you'll see him come in. And I think they showed versatility that they went small ball a little bit more early on in this game. And you'll see against other teams, like if they play France, you'll probably see them go with a little bit bigger lineup. And you may see them start Embiid and Anthony Davis, or put Bam Adebayo in there a little bit more and play a little bit bigger. KD, when he comes back, will be a big piece of this team as well. I'm guessing he would replace Devin Booker in this starting lineup. Maybe Jrue Holiday, but possibly Devin Booker. You put him back on that bench and then have a little bit more height and have another player that guys just like to ball with. And he like that's Kevin Durant just loves to play basketball. So he's a guy that everyone enjoys playing with because he's going to try and find the open guy. He's not going to, you know, just hog the ball and go into business for himself. And I don't think anybody on the team really did. I think there's guys that are just more used to having the ball in their hands. And so you saw that a little bit where guys would get a little bit more. But even Anthony Edwards, who started out going, which I think he knew, he came in and no one was hitting shots. So I'm going to go try and hit my shots. He started hitting his. He was fine. And then had a couple turnovers and then shorted up and started making better passes. They just played much better in the second half than they played in the first half. But overall, you wanted to see it because Team Canada is one of the better teams. They just didn't have the size to go up against USA. If they were able to have Zach Edey on that team, Zach Edey opted out to play for to get ready for Memphis, go to Summer League. So if they would have had Zach Edey, just because that gives you the 7'4" guy in the middle that Team USA has to deal with. So that would have been something. But without that, really good guard play, but not enough players to get it done. And once you start going to the bench and, you know, in actual play, SGA and Jamal Murray will play more. And so you'd have to deal with that more, that when the bench came in for Canada in an exhibition game, Team USA's depth is just going to be bigger than pretty much any other team they're going to play against.
Yeah, you're right. And who can present, you know, guards like Canada did have, and also a presence inside. I mean, they'll go to Abu Dhabi and they'll play, I believe, Australia and Serbia in some exhibition game. Serbia will have Jokic.
I don't know if Jokic is on that team, though. Is he?
Oh, is he? Oh, I didn't know.
I don't think he's playing on that team.
Oh, okay. Well, then that's the case. Then they definitely don't have anything to worry about if he's not playing on his team.
Yeah, I don't think he's playing with them.
Okay. I don't know who's going to be able to present that kind of problem to Team USA. I think you may have one, but not the other, kind of how Canada did. And also, leading scorer ended up being Anthony Edwards, as you mentioned. He had 13 points, 6 of 10, had 3 rebounds. Steph Curry had 12 points in that game. And Steph did say something else. He said, it's tough for guys on this team who are used to taking, you know, 15, 20 shots. He says sometimes it's just tough to not overthink it.
Yeah.
Because some guys are trying deliberately to not be a ball hog.
Yep.
And they understand, hey, I'm used to being, you know, the guy taking 15, 20 shots a game. I don't want to be a ball hog, and I don't want to stop the ball movement. I don't want it to stop with me because there's so many other talented guys. So he said guys will overthink it, actually. And then everybody starts passing.
Yeah.
And he said it's really tough to find your groove, your rhythm, and your role with this group.
And especially guys like, you know, Tatum, LeBron, those guys are just big guys that can go downhill. And on most of these guys that are going to be guarding them, they'd have no problem getting to the basket and getting high percentage shots. But you just don't really want to do that over and over and over again when you're playing on a team like this, because it takes everybody else out of the game, that the ball gets to you and you just dribble in and go right to the bucket over and over, and everybody else has to kind of sit around, wait for a three or collapse in to try and get a rebound. So
exactly.
There is that part of it if they're trying to figure out. That's why you do these exhibition games, so you can start to feel a little bit better, so you can win some games and feel a little bit better, so you're not doing that in your opening rounds. I don't know how bad their opening rounds, because they have Serbia in it, but I believe when I looked the other night, Jokic was not part of that team. Jovic, who plays for Miami, is, but not Jokic. So if you take him out, that limits what they're going to be able to do. I think France would be your biggest worry. France and Canada are probably your two biggest worries in the actual Olympics. France has a bunch of young players and a bunch of – yeah, they have height, you know. And then you also talk about if they've got guys like Reece Ache and Alex Sarr, who are your number one and two pick in the draft this year, if those guys end up over there, there's some good young players over in France. So those would be the ones. Also, it's in Paris. So there's a little home court advantage for them.
That's a great point. Yeah, and their defense, at least at the rim, is going to be next level for that French team. All right, good breakdown there about the team USA's win over Canada, 86-72. All right, we come back. We'll go behind the burnt orange curtain. Been looking at Texas's transition into the SEC, new ecosystem, new trends, new philosophies, new systems, new identities offensively and defensively. So I've been looking at Texas really in some of the conceptual signatures that Texas actually has been using over the last 3 years under Sark, and how those may translate into their transition into the SEC based on the recent trends and patterns that I've been able to recognize in the SEC. So we'll talk about that on the other side and go behind the burnt orange curtain when we come back right here on the Rodcast. This is the Rodcast featuring Patrick Davis. I'm Lifetime Longhorn. Rod Babers coming back on the Horn.
And they were all asking themselves the same question. What is behind that curtain?
All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. Time to get into some Texas football conversation here. Go behind the burnt orange curtain. So I've been looking at the SEC and Texas' upcoming schedule. We're just doing deep dive on the SEC as a conference, stylistically, philosophically. Like, what, you know, what are the different trends? What are the different conceptual signatures? Like, what style of football do these teams play? Something that we were all really familiar with in Big 12 country, not the case with the SEC. So I've been looking at just a few of the just offensive patterns, some of the concepts offensively that stand out to me that I think are going to be important for Texas transition into the SEC. Some things I've been tracking, you guys know this, with Texas for years. Now I'm starting to track them in the SEC and see where Texas is. Are they ahead of the game? Are they ahead of the curve with some of these concepts and trends? Or are they behind the curve in terms of their transition to the SEC with some of the more popular concepts and ideas in the SEC? So first, you guys hear me talk about pre-snap motion all the time. The pre-snap motion rate in the SEC is relatively low compared to what Texas saw in the Big 12 and to what Texas runs. There's 34% average pre-snap motion rate in the SEC. Texas is, you know, above 50%, usually between 50 and 55%. The Big 12 has a higher rates of it too. And you guys know I've actually, suggested, advised Sark to use even more of it, right? I know he used a lot of pre-snap motion, 50%, but his I would say a lot of his inspirations in the NFL from that Mick Shanahan coaching tree, hell, man, they're at 80-plus percent. Miami Dolphins, Mike McDaniel's at 80-plus percent. Shano with the 49ers at 75%. Sean McVay's at 70%. Matt LaFleur is at 64%. So I think he actually could ratchet it up even more, and this year would be the year to do it. It's something I think targets to motion, something that with more motion, you end up targeting more players who were in motion. The completion percentage is always 80-plus percent, or at least it has been in 2 to 3 years that Texas has been with Sark as the head coach under the Sark regime. And in the other year, it was 78% completion percentage, always 10 yards per attempt or around it, which is what you have been for the last 2 years. Your explosive play rate is really high out of it. So when you are targeting players who were in motion prior to the snap or at the time of the snap, it actually increases your efficiency and your explosivity as an offense. So Sark's ahead of the game on that, though. He should be, like I said, even more so. He should be even more extreme with his usage, but he's ahead of the SEC average. If you look at the explosive play rate overall in the SEC, it's at 14%. You got better defense in the SEC. Texas is nearly 17% explosive play rate in 2023. Texas offense is really explosive. It could be even more so. If Sark starts using more concepts, doubling down on more explosive concepts, like I just mentioned, targets to motion, right? You got explosive play rates of 30%, between 23 and 30%. Same thing is true when Sark uses exotic personnel groupings like the pony package. I talk about the pony package all the time. Well, I love it because the explosive play rates are so high out of it. These are plays, chunk yardage plays, 10-plus yard runs, 15-plus yard passes. You're at, the last 3 years, you're at 17, 23, and 23% explosive play rates out of those the multi-back sets, the pony package. If you even look at the 6-0 line package, another exotic personnel grouping, your explosive pass rate, man, you're close to, you're at 26% last year, your explosive pass rate out of that 6-0 line package. Your explosive play rate is 18%+. So you're above your average in a lot of those, you know, those areas, in a lot of those personnel groupings. You're above your average offensively in explosive play rate, just because defenses, they can't prepare for it, or at least they don't prepare for it. They only got a certain amount of time to prepare for it, number one. But they don't see him all the time. They don't see those looks. They don't see two tailback sets. Remember the story about Nick Saban says his team didn't know what to do when Tennessee lined up in I formation against them a couple of years ago. He had to call a timeout because they hadn't seen I formation. Just two backs in the backfield. They don't see it. They work in spread offenses all the time. So present them with some unfamiliar concepts. I like those pony packages. Why the pony package is the most explosive, most efficient, and most effective personnel grouping that Sark has used. The 6-0 line package. You know, nobody has a 6-0 line package with as much girth and as much mass as Texas, and it's not in the Big 12. But even in the SEC, they don't see that a lot, so break it out. Even targets to motion are pretty exotic because most teams' targets to motion are relatively low. Their rates are, you know, probably less than 10%. If you get extreme with some of these concepts and some of these personnel packages, some of these ideas, I'm telling you, I think the explosive play rates would go through the roof. You'd be even more explosive. It's just my theory. Empty is another one of those things. We'll talk about that a little bit later on too. But getting back to it. So explosive play rate, Texas is ahead of the curve there. Deep pass rate, Texas is about average. Right now they're at 14% deep pass rate. I think the SEC average is around 13.7%. So it's not, you know, the difference is negligible. Sark wants to be more of a deep ball connoisseur. All right, he wants to be more of a lethal vertical deep passing attack. I think he recognized that it's not a natural strength for Quinn. Quinn has gotten better at it, especially the last seven starts. He's, you know, averaging 43% completion percentage on those deep balls. He was 24% prior to that, went from an off-target rate of 44% on deep balls to 25%. So his QBR was 23 on deep balls. It was abysmal. Now it's 92 in the last seven starts. So he's getting better with the deep ball. And I think Sark wants to throw it more. You could see it increase more in the SEC. I wouldn't guarantee it, but I know Sark philosophically, it's part of his DNA, and he was stubborn about it when he first got to Texas. He has since dialed back, curtailed it, because I think he recognized it was hurting his team to, when you're not converting those deep shots on early downs, and you're in a second and down, second and 10, second and long, and then third and long, it ends up hurting your young quarterback. So deep ball, you're relatively even there. Early down pass rate, the early down pass rate in the SEC is around 45%, so they want to run the ball on early downs. Sark likes to pass the ball, actually, on early downs. My man CJ Vogel had a great stat. You can go check it out at CJ Vogel _OTF. He went and analyzed every first drive for Texas in every game last season and found that Sark had over a 75% pass rate on that first drive. Now, they're not all vertical shots downfield. They're not all deep shots, but, you know, screens, RPOs, some high percentage passes, definitely a lot of play action in there. You know, it's 50% of Sark's passing game. So it just shows you that Sark would rather, at least when he's in his bag, when he's being innovative and creative, that's part of his opening script, he wants to throw it, especially with a veteran quarterback like Quinn Ewers. I think the early down pass rate for Texas is going to increase even more. That's another cheat code, another loophole to help you basically find a way to exploit defenses, because defenses are built, engineered, and constructed to be run first or stop the run on early downs. That's the way they're built. Most defensive coordinators, they don't call the plays to be a effective pass defense on early downs. So throw it on early downs when they're in their run defense mostly. And that's kind of the hack. And Sark uses it pretty effectively. So that's something. Also, with some run concepts, outside zone is more popular in the SEC now. If you go look at it, outside zone, wide zone is one of Sark's top five running concepts. Sark loves the outside, the wide zone. They call it outside zone, but the split wide zone, also a big part of Sark's offense. So that'll fit right in, translating to the SEC. 67% of Sark's offense in running is zone blocking. The counters in the SEC have increased exponentially. You got a 215% increase in the SEC play in just counters alone. Sark loves the counter tray, the GY counter. It's one of his favorite plays. The counter tray RPO is also one of Sark's most popular plays, so that also will fit right into where the SEC is trending in their running concepts. 12 personnel is the second most popular personnel grouping in the SEC. That is also the case for Sark. Sark loves, he says, the tight end second most important position in his offense. So he loves 12 personnel. But you guys know I've always advocated be more exotic. Yes, 12 personnel, you know, can be your second most utilized personnel grouping behind 11 personnel, one back, one tight end, one back, two tight ends. But use more of the 21 personnel, two backs, one tight end. Use more of the big 11, big 12 with your extra offensive linemen. Use more of, honestly, I think you should use more 10 personnel. I even have here 10 personnel usage has been, last year was the lowest since 2019 in the SEC, 3.7%. Of the plays were out of 10 personnel. That's one back, zero tight ends, four wide receivers on the field. Texas is so deep at wide receiver right now. Ryan Wingo, Bolden, Golden, Jonte Cook, DeAndre Moore. I mean, hell, the list goes on and on, right? Isaiah Bond. I mean, this is the deepest that Sark has had the wide receiving core at Texas since he's been here. The last time he had a wide receiving core, at least close to this deep, was at Alabama. Now, he had four first-round wide receivers then, but he did have the red package where he played four wide receivers at the same time. Why not? That is nightmare fuel for any defensive coordinator. It's matchup mismatches and matchup disadvantages across the board for the defense. You can do the same thing in Texas. You don't have four first-round wide receivers, but you got a lot of wide receiving talent. And in the SEC, you really could shell-shock them because they don't practice against or play against a lot of teams that will run 10 personnel. They just don't see it a lot. And they definitely don't see it with a multi-year starting quarterback, with a offensive line that's got four of the five returning, and with a wide receiving core as deep as Texas has. And you could have Jaden Blue out there in the backfield also offering another speed dynamic and a speed matchup that'll be favorable to you and advantageous to you. So I would use more of that 10 personnel package. Sark, he breaks out something new every year or so, right? You got the Big 11, Big 12 2 years ago. You got that the pony package when you first got here. I think now it's time to add something new to the repertoire. 10 personnel could be it this year. Something else, a tight bunch usage actually in the SEC is also something that is declining, not with Sark. Sark loves tight bunch. And we talked about this earlier, about compressed, condensed sets following Shanahan and that on that Mick Shanahan coaching tree. Sark is going to have a lot of condensed and compressed sets. That's declining in the SEC. It is, I think, for Sark, it's going to be increasing in usage. And why not? It's another cheat code, another loophole. I always say Sark's offense is just an accumulation, a gumbo of cheat codes and force multipliers, right? And hacks, defensive hacks. And he uses them rail, and one of them is compressed condensed sets. Empty usage is flat now in the SEC. Another cheat code, I think, for Sark, using more empty. I've been tracking empty formation here with Sark for a while, and it is definitely one of his most lethal concepts. Should use it more. Last three games of the season last year against Washington, against Oklahoma State and Tech, out of empty. Quinn Ewers, over 75% completion percentage, over 30% explosive play rate, over, you go look at the first down rate, was over 50% first down rate. You were averaging over 12 yards per attempt last three games running empty formation. He wasn't great the entire season, probably took too many sacks out of it. Your completion percentage, relatively low. But if you look at explosive play rates, empty, pony package, the Big 11, Big 12 package, your exotic looks are where you're getting more of your explosive plays from, compared to your usual explosive play rate, which is still high. 16, over 16% is really good. But empty, you're getting over 23, hell, this year 25% explosive play rate. Those are unbelievable numbers. All right, so there you go. That's some trends in the SEC to follow that I think Texas could take advantage of and could actually probably set the trend in a lot of these areas too. We come back. We'll get into Off the Record on the Other Side right here on the Rodcast featuring Patrick Davis on Lifetime Longhorn. Rod Babies coming back on the horn.
D.D. Mega doo-doo, I'm sorry, Mangudu.
Once it's turned on, the sign will spell out Deli Cat Essen.
Well, I don't get a brain man comb.
Well, congratulations. Continue good sex in the Big East.
Thank you, Jimmy.
And boom goes the dynamite.
It's time for another edition of Off the Record.
Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. F***ing thing sucks.
All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. Trying to get to a little off the record here. So according to Life and Style magazine, don't ask me why I'm reading Life and Style magazine, Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce, apparently their love affair is quite expensive. You know, the biggest pop star in the world, obviously a celebrity, pro athlete like Travis Kelce. Apparently for them to keep their love affair going and to make sure that they, you know, get to see each other because she's jet setting around the world and touring and keeping up appearances, and he's got obligations, especially once the season starts. They are reporting that they spend $100,000 a day together. An insider exclusively tells Life and Style how they spent $100,000. They said Taylor and Travis have become international jet setters, and their extravagant spending is off the charts. The multiple bodyguards, the private jets, the deluxe hotels, plus the romantic gestures they're both known for probably makes them the most excessively spending couple in the world currently. The source says it's pretty extreme. Taylor's 34, Travis 34, began dating in summer of 2023. So they're basically kind of claiming, in order to keep things going with all the security, and you got to buy out an entire restaurant just so y'all can have some dinner, because otherwise she'd be mobbed by paparazzi and fans. You know, it's just, yeah, I mean, I don't know about $100,000 a day, but I'm sure it adds up over time.
I'm sure it adds up. I bet $100,000 was a day, and they were like, man, we'd spend $100,000 on Thursday. And the person's like, they spent $100,000 a day. And you're like, no, one day they spent $100,000. I'm sure they spend plenty of money, but they're also apart a lot too, because they both have their own lives. And I bet they're not spending the money.
They make a lot of money too.
They do.
I mean, she's basically a billionaire, and he makes a lot of money.
That's why he needed that new contract.
Yeah, but say, yeah, he just got paid. It says Travis spares no expense in making sure he travels in class when he flies to her concerts all over the world. Since they met, they've both spent over $1 million on private jets, the insider reveals. She even fills the jet with her favorite things like Joe's Kansas City barbecue, seafood, Alfredo, and all this really extravagant stuff.
Not putting seafood on a plane.
Well, her plane, you could. She got a different kind of plane, man.
Don't you think
her private plane is different from most people's private planes? She's probably got a 5-star chef on her private plane.
No, I get that, but still, seafood smells, man.
Hey, not on that plane. They got different ways of getting rid of.
You're recycling oxygen on a plane, man.
I know what I'm saying. Hey, man, that private jet's different. He said the couple has over 20 bodyguards who get paid over $1,000 a day to protect them. And the pro athlete spares no expense, it says here, to lavish Taylor with things she loves. He'll spend thousands a day just on filling her dressing room with her favorite flowers, orchids, and hydrangeas, the source says. Despite dropping a significant amount of money on each other, the source says Taylor and Travis don't even think about the money they're spending. They're basically so in love. They like to be comfortable and express their love for each other. And this is how they do it, the insider claims.
Must be nice.
She said Taylor has already written love songs about their romance, too. She does that with all of her men, though.
Yeah.
That's part of the process for her. It's like, I date somebody, they treat me like, first of all, they love me at first, the infatuation phase. Then they end up treating me like dirt. I make a great album off of it, sell millions of those albums, and make millions off of them, and everybody gets to live, you know, through my pain, via my songs. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
And then her promotion essentially is the romance. It's the romance. Everybody follows the romance of her and then follows the decay of the relationship. And then ultimately the album that follows the decay is about the relationship that we all just witnessed and watched via TMZ and everything. And it's like we get to relive it all over again via the album. Then go through and find Easter eggs in the lyrics like, did he do that? What did he do? Oh, I didn't know that. Like, I don't do that, but I'm sure other people do.
I'm sure.
I don't. I'm just saying that's the process.
Nice disclaimer there at the end.
I don't. No, I don't. I couldn't even name you like three Taylor Swift. I know she's awesome, but I'm not even Taylor Swift.
She's got that song Bad Blood, right?
She's got, yeah.
And then I'm sure a bunch of other ones. Shake It Off. I know Shake It Off. I know another one that I got two.
Yeah. And they're amazing. They're great songs.
I mean, they're songs.
It's just not my thing. They're songs. they're songs. So that's the report here. That they love each other so much that they are blinded by the amount of cash they're spending to be with each other. Yeah.
Yeah. And what magazine was this again?
Life and Style magazine.
How are they getting a scoop?
Dude, they're all about life and style. That's the
yeah, but Life and Style magazine. First of all, how do magazines still get scoops? I thought magazines were dead.
I think that's a great point. But I think it's like online. That's what I'm looking at. I don't have the physical magazine. I hope they don't have a physical magazine. Maybe they do.
Unless you get signed up.
It's lifeandstylemag.com.
And the magazines were just for kids to come around to your house and be like, do you want to subscribe to 48 magazine subscription?
Oh, I remember that. Yeah. I remember them days. Door-to-door salesman. They still got a few people I see every now and then, but back in the day, you can actually make some sales door-to-door. Now there's no way people are buying stuff door-to-door.
No.
I don't know why y'all still trying to sell stuff door-to-door. Y'all need to stop it. Because ain't nobody, y'all know y'all ain't sold a damn thing door-to-door.
I don't get why every door-to-door salesman that comes to my house that I greet not nicely. And I'm like, I'm not rude, but I'm also like, hey, I'm not buying anything from you. You can save the pitch.
You can save the pitch.
I'm not supporting the industry of door-to-door sales. Not supporting the industry of door-to-door sales. So just move it along. Well, just letting you know, the more you talk, the more angry I'm going to get about this. So I just enjoy my day. And then you came up and were like, hey, you want to spend some money you ain't got?
Oh, man.
No, I'm good.
No, the worst is when they get you when you're already outside. When they come knock on the door, you can avoid. But when you're already outside doing something, they walk up and you go, oh, no. And you're like, hey, how you doing? They go, hey, how are you? And you go, oh, no. Oh, yeah, you're dressed. Oh, you got khakis on. Oh, damn it. Okay.
Let me tell you about. Dude, do you know the internet exists?
Seriously, I feel bad.
Tell me what website to Google, and then I'll look up to see if y'all are real or not. Can I do that at least? You just want me to trust a random person on the street?
just want me to trust a random person. Like, yeah, no. I mean, door-to-door sales was good when people could hitchhike. Like, that's when the world was much more trusting. Right? Craig Way always tells stories like he used to hitchhike. And I was like, you hitchhiked as a kid? He's like, yeah, I hitchhike. Back then, you could hitchhike. You could, like, get to another state hitchhiking. Somebody, first of all, the trust to get in the car with a stranger who could take you anywhere. And then the trust to go hitchhiking with somebody who just, you don't know what the hell that person hitchhiking could be. It could be a mass murderer or something. You don't know. Y'all just getting in the car with perfect strangers. You don't give a damn about it. Just random strangers. No. No.
That also,
the world was very trusting,
you know,
back then.
No, it was. It was also those road trips where we didn't have cell phones with all of the world at our fingertips to be like, let me just play this podcast or listen to this radio station I designed myself. You were like, there's nothing. I have nothing to listen to for the next 3 hours, so let me get a conversation with this random stranger on the street.
It was boredom.
It's just boredom, you pick up hitchhikers. Now we got things.
That's true. That's a great point. You might be right about that, man. It's like, oh, no radio. My radio station is going out. My signal's going out. Let me pick up a hitchhiker around
here. I'm going to sit here in complete silence for the next 3 hours. Or pick up a stranger.
I would rather drive in silence.
Yes, all of us would now. This is apparently a thing, but no, I'm with you.
Oh, I'm sorry, door-to-door salesman. I know some of y'all out there, and God bless y'all, but... What's the success rate? When was the last time you made a sale door to door? I know it ain't working. You're better than that. You're better than that.
And I guarantee you, when's the last time you made a sale for someone under 80?
That's true. Yes, exactly, because those are the same people that were hitchhiking.
Yeah. Same people that want to have a conversation.
So nursing homes, that's where you need to go. Knock on that door. Then they'll be open to it. All right, here we go. We'll come back. I know we're up against it. We're way late, but we'll come back and we'll get into some NFL news, notes, and nuggets, NFL odds on the inside right here on the Rodcast featuring Patrick Davis of Lifetime Longhorn. Rod Rivers coming back on the horn.